Cybercrimes may start on a computer, but the consequences end up being extremely real.
From bank robberies to geopolitical warfare, this list covers the gamut of cybercrimes that shocked the world.
The crimes at the top of this list broke new ground for warfare between countries and showed just how much damage can be caused with just one tiny USB stick.
By the end of this list, you'll be running to change your passwords and add double authentications to protect your precious data. Hey, all you weirdos. Welcome to Crime Countdown, a Spotify original from Parcast. I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena. Every week, we'll highlight 10 fascinating stories of history's most engaging and unsettling crimes, all picked by the Parcast research gods.
This episode, we're counting down the top 10 incredible cybercrimes.
So I'm good with the computer, but I'm not great with super intricate computer things,
yeah,
I would say. I'm not completely in the dark, but as the times move forward, it definitely gets a little harder to keep up. I think I'm becoming one of those olds that's like, well, I can't keep up. I don't know. But I've definitely in the past have found a way into like past boyfriends' text messages or emails.
Oh, yeah.
In my day. I don't recommend that because you know what? If you have to do that, you're going to find something
that you do not want to see.
If you're looking and you feel like you have to look, you're going to find something. That's my PSA. It's not worth it.
It's not. Honestly, being the millennial, like Gen Z cusp that I am, you would think that I'd be pretty tech savvy,
yeah.
But I am not. That's why Elena edits Morbid. She's trying to say that she's not good with computers, but I think you are.
Thank you.
Although I will say I did have to show you and John a way to search for your apps on your phone
yes,
a lot
you
easier.
Did. You did.
And later this week, I also have to help my grandpa. He called me the other day and he was like, I need you to come down here and scan some of these documents for me on the computer. Well, also, why is my printer not working? So maybe I am pretty tech savvy after all.
You're who everyone calls.
As far as the olds in my life are concerned.
Exactly. Yeah, it's mostly just the social media stuff that I don't grasp.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I have to have you like post things for me or figure things. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. I think the other day I actually asked Ash, like, how do I sent her a contact from my phone and I copy and pasted it.
I was like, you know, there's a button you can just press that says share contact.
She was like, I can make this easier for you. And I just said, no.
She was like, I don't want to know.
I don't want to.
I don't want to be taught.
I want to be among the olds. But you know what? I do have a couple of entries on my side of the list that have to do with social media, which means I would not be on that team.
Oh, man. Well, my number one is something that I truly can't even fathom. It's a hack so intense, it halted a movie release.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I think I might know.
I think you, once we
Maybe.
Get to it, you definitely
Maybe.
Will. I'm excited. Elena has 5 incredible cybercrimes, and so do I, but neither of us knows what the other one is bringing to the list.
And as a heads up, this episode will include mentions of suicide. Please keep this in mind when deciding if, how, and when you'll listen. For resources on these topics, visit spotify.com/resources. Let's start the countdown.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and 2 tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
10.
I'll start us off with number 10 on the countdown, the Citibank hack. In 1994, bank robberies went virtual for the very first time. That year, hacker Vladimir Levin managed to steal $10 million by accessing Citibank's corporate client accounts. In July of 1994, corporate clients of Citibank noticed around $400,000 missing from their accounts.
Oh, okay.
They notified the FBI.
Me too. I would do that as well.
By October, that number had ballooned to $10 million.
Why does nobody think that somebody's not going to realize $10 million is missing?
Yeah. Well, the man behind the crime was computer whiz Vladimir Levin, based out of St. Petersburg, Russia. Levin broke into Citibank's computers, stealing customers' ID codes and passwords.
This just makes me, again, want to bury all my money in the backyard.
It truly does. According to prosecutors, he then made 18 separate transactions, moving funds from Citibank customers' accounts to accounts held by collaborators. His collaborators set up a global network of accounts in countries from Finland to Israel to hide the stolen cash. But the FBI was on to him. They traced one of his transfers to a Russian couple in San Francisco. The couple tried to take money out of their account and found it was frozen.
Oh.
They reportedly rushed back to their apartment and started to pack.
They're like, we gotta get ourselves out of here.
This is bad.
They're on to us.
The FBI arrested the pair as they were getting ready to fly back to Russia.
Got ya.
The couple ratted out Levin as the mastermind and agreed to help the FBI track him down. They just flipped.
Yep, they were like,
yep, no, you don't even need to try. In 1995, Levin was arrested in London. He was later extradited to the U.S. and pleaded guilty of conspiracy to commit bank, wire, and computer fraud. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison. And he had to pay Citibank $240,000.
But wasn't $10 million missing?
He like, excuse me, sir, what?
How did we get to the end there?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the punishment really fits the crime.
It did not.
Needs more.
Nine.
At number nine is the NASA hack. In the year 2000, 15-year-old hacker Jonathan James broke into NASA's computer systems and downloaded $1.7 million in proprietary information. The software he downloaded controlled the environment in the Space Center, including things like temperature and humidity.
No big deal.
Very casual here. James began playing with his family's computer at age 6. His father was a computer programmer. When he got to middle school and received his own personal computer, James would often fight with his parents about his computer usage, which would stretch late into the night. After his parents took away his computer at one point, he ran away and refused to come home until he got it back.
Well, that's a behavioral issue.
I would call someone. James claimed that his computer usage wasn't affecting his grades, which remained high. It turns out he had hacked into his school system and changed his grades.
So is he lying?
Yes. Not necessarily.
No, he is. Stretching the truth.
At age 15, James, who went by the name Comrade Online, broke into 13 computers at the Marshall Space Flight Center. He spent 2 days cruising their systems. During that time, he downloaded $1.7 million worth of NASA proprietary software. NASA was forced to shut down all computers for 21 days. They spent $41,000 for labor and equipment replacement. 21 days NASA had to shut down because of a 15-year-old.
Because of this little turd. That's like, you could have, like, really, this could have been such a catastrophe.
Oh, absolutely.
It's outrageous. Like, and just because, like, what's your problem, man?
What's your problem, James? Why are you doing this? Around the time of the NASA hack, James also hacked into a U.S. Department of Defense system. This hack, which was the first one to ever successfully penetrate the Pentagon, got him access to thousands of private emails from the department.
What?
This 15-year-old is wildin'. On January 26, 2000, federal agents in bulletproof vests arrested James in his Florida home and confiscated his computers. He was sentenced to 6 months in a juvenile detention facility and 2 years probation. He was banned from using computers during that time.
Yeah.
You might guess. He was also required to write a letter of apology to the Secretary of Defense and NASA.
Dear Secretary of Defense.
Dear NASA.
Sorry.
My apologies.
My bad.
James became known as the first juvenile to be sentenced to jail time for hacking. In a sad twist, Jonathan James went on to die by suicide at age 24. He was under investigation as part of a hacking ring that had broken into a string of major retail stores.
Oh, man.
He believed federal officials were going to make a scapegoat out of him, even though he said he wasn't involved in the hack.
That's a crazy tragic story.
It truly is. I don't even know if I had really heard the details of that either.
You just wish he used his skills for good.
I know, and he could have too.
Eight.
At number eight is the Korea Credit Bureau hack. In 2014, a worker at Korea Credit Bureau was discovered with the personal data of 20 million South Koreans, almost half of the country's population. An investigation found that he had spent a year and a half copying credit card numbers, ID numbers, addresses, and salary information onto a personal hard drive. The guilty worker, who was only identified by his last name, Park, was a 39-year-old technician. Ironically, he was hired to help set up systems to detect credit card fraud.
Wow.
His theft was uncovered during a forensic audit of the company. South Koreans were angry when the hack was discovered, and many of them stormed into their banks demanding to know their money was safe.
That's what I would do, of course.
One card user told Reuters, "Of course I'm angry. Anyone might know where I pay my credit card bills, let alone my phone number and where I live. I might as well keep all my money in my closet." Which, they're right.
Yeah, he really is.
Although the majority of the data wasn't widely distributed, it turns out that Park had sold the stolen data to several phone marketing companies.
Ooh,
what a weird, like, reason to do all this.
That happens all the time, though, because then they can do, like, scams.
Yeah. The government indicted two of those marketing companies for buying stolen data. As punishment, Korea's Financial Supervisory Commission banned three credit card companies for issuing new cards for 3 months. This was considered a harsh punishment, as South Korea's credit card market was extremely dense and competitive. The three major credit card companies, whose customers were hit the hardest, were also required to cover any financial losses due to the breach.
Good, which, they absolutely should.
In addition, chief executives at the three credit card companies resigned.
We're like, we're going to go ahead and get out of here.
You know what? I have had like little, like a debit card hack kind of thing, like where somebody somehow gets your debit card number.
Yeah.
And the one that I had, they were getting their nails done in Georgia.
What?
Yeah, they just like kept going to nail salons in Georgia.
That's crazy. When I worked at the salon, there was like this huge like credit card thing going on with actually somebody that worked there. And they were like copying people's credit card information and buying lunch with it.
Oh my God.
So my boss found out and was like, you have to leave.
You're literally a criminal.
Yeah.
Bye.
Crazy.
Wow.
Seven.
Number seven on our countdown of cyber crimes is teens hack the Department of Defense.
Again.
In 1998, a group of teenagers hacked into computers belonging to the U.S. military. They managed to hack into some 800 other government systems, including federal laboratories that carried out nuclear weapons research.
This is safe.
I'm like, guys, what?
Stop doing that.
The Deputy of Defense at the time called the hack, quote, the most systematic and organized attack on Pentagon networks to date. The hack was traced to two high school sophomores in California.
Sure was.
The teens' homes were raided and their computers were seized. An assistant U.S. attorney said it didn't appear that the teens were, quote, seeking to undermine any government programs or threaten the security of the U.S. They appeared to be more interested into breaking into the computers.
Can you imagine being their parents and, like, the U.S. government storms into your home and is like, your teenager has hacked into, like, what?
Like, I would be like, he did?
like the act, like has hacked into like the Pentagon's defense system.
I'd be like, oh, that's why they didn't take out the garbage last week. That makes sense now.
I'd be like, when? when did this happen?
Is that why their chores aren't getting done?
Was I cooking dinner when you did this? What happened?
That's the other thing. As a parent, I feel like you'd be like, where was I when this happened?
How long did this take? Like, whoa.
Now, this hack was apparently nothing new. Security professionals in 1998 estimated that there are over 250,000 attempts to hack Pentagon systems each year.
I believe it.
The teenage hackers were never named as they were juveniles. One of them apparently gave an interview to an online hacker journal where he said he hacked the Pentagon computer for power, dude. You know, power. I love that he used the word dude in his explanation.
I'm literally obsessed with that.
Power, dude.
You know?
Power.
Power.
They also claim to be working under an Israeli hacking protege who went by the name Analyzer.
Ooh.
Who called one of the two teens his students.
This is very intense.
The Analyzer ended up being arrested in Israel for his involvement in the hack and served 8 months in prison. The California teens reached a plea deal with federal prosecutors where they each pleaded guilty to one count of illegally accessing a government computer and one count of wiretapping. In exchange, the prosecutors asked for the boys to be sentenced to probation. As part of their probation, the boys were only allowed to use a computer connected to the internet under the supervision of a teacher, employer, or librarian. They were also forbidden from working in the computer field while under probation.
Wow.
I love that. What are you, like 16 as a sophomore?
Yeah.
I was definitely not coding or like hacking into anything. I was like trying to see if I could get my curfew extended.
The most I was doing with computers at 16 years old was in computer class at school watching Tales of the Blowed. And salad fingers.
I love it.
That was pretty much it. That was the extent of my like, hoo-hoo, I'm doing something wrong. I'm watching salad fingers at school when I should be typing this random paragraph over and over again in typing class.
Yeah.
I definitely wasn't hacking into the Pentagon. I can tell you that.
Couldn't be me.
Six.
At number six this week is the Hacker Iceman. Max Butler, or Max Vision, an Iceman as he later became known, was a small town guy in rural Idaho who Wired described as a computer geek. He would go on to set up a massive black market of credit cards that led to over $86 million in fraudulent charges. I always thought the Iceman was Richard Kuklinski, but I guess it's Max Butler.
I was like, wait, what?
I was like, the Iceman? What?
Makes an appearance? He's a hacker as well?
Yeah. Max started getting into computers and hacking at age 14, around the time of his parents' divorce.
Finding a healthy hobby to get involved in.
Healthy outlet. According to a 2008 article in Wired, at some point in his teens or early 20s, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder by psychiatrists. At age 20, he had served 4 years in jail for assault with a deadly weapon after attacking and threatening to kill his ex-girlfriend.
That escalated so quickly.
Not great. In 1995, after his release from prison, Max moved to California to a small town near Silicon Valley.
Fitting.
He started working as a hacker for corporate clients, showing them weak spots in the systems. Even volunteered as a hacker for the FBI's local office.
Wow. So see, like, he could have done his work for good.
That's the thing. You're using your skills for the greater good.
Continue to do so.
But he spent his nights poking around private networks, including one hack that got him access to a trove of U.S. government and military data. That hack got him sent back to jail for 18 months.
I feel like if you hack the U.S. government, you need to be sent to jail for like a bit of an extended period.
Right to jail.
18 months is not long enough. Also, love that reference.
After prison, Max was introduced to Christopher Aragon, who had served jail time for bank robberies and apparently had access to quick cash. The two set up a huge black market hacking operation because he is not learning his lesson at all.
You're also like, how do these people just like come together?
I know. How does it get brought up?
Right?
I just need to know. Max and Christopher would rent a hotel room in order to hide their IP address. Max, using his online moniker, Iceman, hacked into the systems of fellow cyber crooks and stole their stolen data, including identity information, passwords, PIN numbers, and most lucrative, the magnetic strip data from the back of credit cards.
I didn't even know that that was a thing.
Me neither. Chris then printed credit cards with the stolen information. Together, he and Max created a site called Carter's Market, where online criminals could buy and sell stolen credit cards and private information. It had upward of 6,000 users.
I need to know if these users were like typing into Google, where can I buy stolen credit card?
And this is like, this makes me sad.
It truly makes me sad
for like who we are as a species. Like, it's just, that is really sad that that many people just want to be bad people.
It also makes me scared.
It's really scary. In 2005, Chris was caught by police using a forged card at a Bloomingdale's.
Ooh, he picked a good store, though. I love Bloomies.
Look at him. He was arrested and his house was searched, where they found hundreds of forged cards.
And probably a lot of break clothing.
Max was eventually arrested as well. Police found a hard drive on him that contained over 1 million fake credit cards.
Wow.
How does that even exist?
I'm like, that was all on one hard drive? Wow.
It's a big hard drive.
For real.
Max pleaded guilty to stealing and selling credit card data for 1.8 million cards. Altogether, his racket amounted to $86 million in fraudulent charges.
That's all?
On February 12, 2010, Max was sentenced to 13 years in prison and ordered to pay $27.5 million in restitution. Chris Aragon was sentenced to 25 years in 2012.
That one is a doozy.
That last one, wow.
Like, wow. My words are gone for that one.
This is just, it truly is making me want to just like move into the mountains and bury,
all my accounts, like take everything out of the bank.
Put my savings in a coffee can and just bury it under an old oak tree.
That's beautiful.
That's what I want to do.
That was a beautiful sentiment.
Everyone just Ron Swanson it. That's all we need to do.
I'm also like, these people are some serious hackers, and we're only halfway through the list.
I know. So we're not even near number one.
I'm nervous.
What could be more shocking than uncovering the deep, dark secrets behind history's biggest stories? Realizing that everything you thought was true was a lie. Hi, it's Carter from the podcast series Conspiracy Theories. Every Monday and Wednesday, take a closer look at the blurred line between fact and fiction and discover that there may be more to the so-called truth than you think. From the government's link to Bigfoot and the otherworldly secrets of the Vatican, to the Grateful Dead's role in the spread of LSD, and more. On Conspiracy Theories, we leave no stone unturned and no skeptic unheard. Some may just be outlandish claims. Others may make you rethink everything. Follow the Spotify original from Parcast, Conspiracy Theories. Listen free only on Spotify.
With Capella University's FlexPath format, you can set your own deadlines, learn at your pace, and access most coursework from anywhere at any time. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
5.
All right, let's jump back in with number 5 on our countdown of incredible cybercrimes.
Starting off the second half of our list is the Ashley Madison hack.
Oh, this one.
Ashley Madison was a dating website for married people hoping to have an affair, but then a group of hackers threatened to release user data unless the site was shut down. When the hackers made good on their threat, the lives of many users were torn apart.
Doing the Lord's work,
honestly.
These hackers were.
I can't with this. Ashley Madison was founded in 2008 with the slogan, "Life is short, have an affair."
Okay, Ashley.
What? Life is short, have some fun. Have some ice cream. Have a vacation.
Life is short, date whoever you want and don't ever get, like, legally bound to someone. How about that?
Life is short. Love your partner.
Yeah.
In 2015, the site claimed to have 37.6 million users, which makes me so sad.
I hope that was just inflating the numbers.
I really hope so. They told users that activity on their site was 100% discreet.
Which, how stupid do you have to be?
Well,
to trust a site called Ashley Madison that's like, we're not going to tell anyone that you're having an affair. Don't worry about it. Like,
shh, it's a wig. On July 12th of that year, a group of hackers sent a message to Ashley Madison employees demanding that the site be shut down or else they were going to release user information. The hackers, calling themselves Impact Team, gave Ashley Madison 30 days to comply, which is plenty of time if you ask
me. It is. Gave you a month.
Impact Team seemed to take issue with the morals of encouraging people to have affairs. They were also critical of how the site dealt with user data. Ashley Madison would charge users $19 to delete their data, but Impact Team claimed the data wasn't actually deleted.
Of course it wasn't.
Are you all
that stupid that you sign up for this thing and you're like, I'm going to have an affair and they're going to delete it all at the end? It's like, are you, what?
Yes.
You all deserved it.
They did. On August 18th, 2015, Impact Team released Ashley Madison's database of users, including names, credit cards, addresses, as well as users' dating criteria like height, weight, even erotic preferences.
And you know what? I don't agree with releasing like addresses.
I was going to say that.
And all like the very personal information, credit cards and all that.
Just the names.
The names, like, I'm sorry, you put yourself on that site, but it's like, you didn't have to release, like, you didn't have to dox them.
Yeah,
as
like,
well.
You have access to their address, just print out a letter to send to their partner.
Exactly.
And be like, hey, they're
That's
having an affair.
The thing. You don't have to tell the world. Just go tell their partner.
Privately. The millions of users were young and old. There were celebrities, CEOs, policemen, even priests on the list.
What?
They were
clutching my pearls.
Crazy. There were also several high-profile Christian celebrities listed, including reality star Josh Duggar.
Are we calling him a Christian celebrity and reality star?
I'm not even
acknowledging. That's what we're calling him now? We're not going to call him what he is?
I'm not acknowledging
his
existence.
We're not going to call him an actual monster and predator?
Gross.
Who deserves to be in jail for the rest of his life?
I hope he is. Duggar never...
Rot, Josh.
Duggar never commented directly on his reported Ashley Madison account.
No?
Or any of the other horrible things that he's done to everybody involved in his life.
He's disgusting.
Vigilantes worked to expose and humiliate the Ashley Madison users. A newspaper in Alabama went so far as to print the names of all users from that area.
Oof.
This is sad.
That's the thing. Like, we're joking here, but like you said, just send a letter to that person saying, we know, like, it's
out
there.
Deal with it privately.
Deal with it privately.
Right.
And it's like, but just don't go on these sites, guys. They're not keeping your information private. No matter what Ashley Madison tells you, she doesn't have your best interest in mind.
She doesn't. Now, on a more serious note, several suicides were reported after the leak, including one of a priest who had signed up for the site.
Exactly. That's why it just gets really, really messy.
Toronto police reported 2 suicides linked to the affair. Ashley Madison's parent company was hit with multiple lawsuits following the leak. In U.S. litigation in 2017, they agreed to pay $11.2 million to approximately 37 million users whose personal data was exposed.
That's the problem here, is personal data was exposed. It's like, we can joke about, like, yeah, you should get caught if you're having an affair, which, like, affairs are wrong.
Yeah,
not
of course
okay.
They are.
Like, that, at least in my idea, like, maybe everybody else is fine with it, but I'm not.
I don't think so.
And, but no, I don't think you should ever release people's personal data. I don't think telling people addresses, personal information, anything like that is okay.
No, because it is eventually going to lead to a big, huge mess.
Yeah, and there is something to be said, like, again, we're joking about this, but there is something to be said about, like, just humiliating someone for the sake of humiliating them. It's like,
right,
what are you really getting out of it? And at the end of the day, that's their business to deal with. It's between them and their partner. It's really none of our, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to step into anybody else's marriage and tell them how to run it. So it's like,
No. We
can laugh about it, like, you know, before it gets to the really serious stuff. And
right,
we can be like, yeah, of course, if you sign up for the site, you're going to get exposed.
Mm-hmm.
But you see that funny little, ah, ha, ha, you're going to get exposed for being a creep on a site, is like a domino effect. It's like a ripple thing where
these things just always are.
It starts getting darker and darker after that. And
No. Then
it becomes not funny, and it becomes like, okay, who's the villain here?
There's a lot of layers to this onion.
There truly is.
4.
Landing at number 4 this week is the Equifax hack. In 2017, hackers managed to break into the systems of Equifax, a credit reporting agency, and steal the data of roughly 145 million Americans, close to half of the entire country.
Great.
4 men from the Chinese military were later charged by the U.S. with the attack. In 2017, Equifax's security system was recommended to get a software upgrade, which the company hadn't yet completed.
Oh, I get those all the time.
Yeah. Several higher-ups from their cybersecurity team had recently left the company, and in the wake of the hack, later said they believed the company was being overly lax with users' private data. Without that upgrade, hackers breached Equifax systems in early 2017. They weren't discovered until later that year, long after the damage was done. Stolen data included names, birth dates, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, and financial data.
That's really scary.
While investigating the hack, many of the tools pointed to it being carried out by Chinese government hackers. Former Attorney General William Barr said that China uses masses of data stolen in breaches like these to better target American intelligence officers. They use the data to develop AI and to see which American officials may be having financial struggles, making them more susceptible to blackmail and bribes. That's so scary.
That's so deep, too. Like, it just kept going and going.
It really is. In February 2020, the U.S. Department of Justice charged 4 members of the Chinese military with being behind the Equifax hack. China's foreign ministry spokesman denied the allegations. As the U.S. can't take them into custody, it is unlikely the 4 Chinese men charged in the case will really ever stand trial in the U.S. Following the hack, Equifax was hit with numerous lawsuits and government investigations. The CEO resigned a few months after the breach was discovered. He had been making a salary of nearly $15 million before the cyber attack. Equifax settled with the Federal Trade Commission, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and 50 U.S. states and territories for up to $425 million towards people affected by the breach.
Wow.
That's a massive hack.
That is a lot of money.
Three.
Number 3 on our countdown of cyber crimes is Mafia Boy. At age 15, Michael Calce, or Mafia Boy as he was known online, managed to take down 6 of the biggest websites in 2000, causing an estimated $1.7 billion in damage. He knew he was in trouble when the U.S. Attorney General swore to find the person responsible for the hack.
Two things. Billion? Whoa. Second thing, 15-year-old boys are trouble.
They are. If we've learned nothing from this.
That's what I've gotten out of this.
Yeah. Michael got his first computer at age 6, just like James earlier.
Look at that.
He carried out his first hack at age 9, hacking AOL's 30-day free trial period to allow him to stay on for longer.
Oh my God, I remember it. Do you all remember it? You all can answer me right now. Getting those CDs in the mail that would give you like 30 free hours or 25 free hours?
No.
Those 30-hour ones, man, that was like, or the 30-day ones were like, whoo,
hit
the jackpot.
I just had AOL.
Okay. Whatever, man.
In the year 2000, he orchestrated the hack that made a name for himself. He took over several university networks and used their computing power to attack outside websites. Here's how he explained it to NPR in 2015. Quote, basically, when I hit enter on the keyboard, the university networks all respond at the same exact time and basically overwhelm websites with too much information. His attack managed to take down Amazon, CNN, Dell, E-Trade, eBay, and Yahoo. But the reason behind his hack wasn't financial. He said it was just to intimidate other hacking groups. Following the hack, Michael noticed a van idling near his home in Canada and figured his house was under surveillance. When the teen was finally arrested by police, he was at a friend's house for a sleepover.
Yeah, because he was 15.
They were staying up late watching the movie Goodfellas and eating junk food.
Mafia boy.
Why didn't they invite me? That sounds great. Michael pleaded guilty to 58 charges related to the hack and was sentenced to 8 months in a youth group rehabilitation home. He recalled that, quote, "The New York Stock Exchange, they were freaking out because they were all investing in these e-commerce companies. And then it's like, okay, a 15-year-old kid can shut us down at any point. Is our money really safe?"
He has a point.
Michael later worked as an internet security consultant. Companies hired him to hack their systems in order to reveal holes in their security.
See?
So finally, we're using our hacking skills for good.
Michael turned it around. Wow. You know what? I like Michael.
I love Michael. He's a great guy.
Michael really did it, and I appreciate that about him.
I'm also like, wow, I was not doing what these kids were doing at six.
I was gonna say.
I think I was making mud pies.
I was getting excited for those 30-day free trials of AOL.
Yeah, right?
That's what I was doing. So I would say, like, usually with all of these countdowns, I'm like, I'm waiting for someone, and I bet you have it. I have no idea.
Oh, really?
You know what? I probably do now that I'm thinking about it. But in the beginning, I'm like, I don't know any of these. Like, I know nothing about computer hacking.
I think when we get to number one, you're going to be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because I'm probably just not even equating it with this.
Yeah, as soon as I say it, you're definitely going to know what it is. I can't say that I'm waiting for anything because the only one I was waiting for is my number one.
Ooh, now I'm excited.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker. The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Two.
We're down to the final two spots on our countdown of incredible cybercrimes. And number two is the Stuxnet worm. The Stuxnet worm is the first cyber weapon known to cause physical damage in the real world. It was supposedly developed in order to wreak havoc on Iran's nuclear capabilities, and it worked. Once Stuxnet was unleashed on Iranian nuclear facilities, their capacity to enrich uranium dropped by an estimated 30%. The Stuxnet worm was first discovered at the Natanz nuclear facility in Iran in 2010, during an inspection by the International Atomic Energy Agency. They noticed a significant number of centrifuges breaking. The reason turned out to be the Stuxnet worm, which targeted the centrifuges used to turn uranium into nuclear fuel. The worm would cause the machines to spin out of control. But at the same time, the worm would send information to the scientists at the lab that everything was operating as normal.
Wow, this is very, like, intricate. It's
very intense. The worm was so effective, it reportedly decreased Iran's ability to enrich uranium by 30%. The facilities at Natanz were underground. A 2019 report by Yahoo News alleges that a Dutch mole worked in Iran with Dutch intelligence, the CIA, and Israel's spy agency, the Mossad, in order to develop Stuxnet. They claimed that the same mole brought the virus into the Iranian facilities with a USB stick. All three intelligence agencies declined to comment on Yahoo's report. No evidence or charges have been brought in the case. The goal of the operation was supposedly to set Iran's nuclear capabilities back, while the US and other countries negotiated sanctions and diplomacy. It seemed to work when a nuclear agreement was reached with Iran in 2015. Iran responded to the attack by arresting and possibly executing several workers at the Natanz facility who they suspected of bringing the virus. It's unclear if that mole that worked with the foreign governments was one of the people arrested or executed. The Stuxnet worm did eventually make it online and infected other computers. Effects weren't as serious because the worm was designed specifically to target nuclear plants. Stuxnet set a precedent for cyber attacks, turning on physical infrastructure. Hackers have since gone on to target things like electrical systems, and automotive researchers managed to hack a Jeep and take control of its gas and brake systems.
Oh, that's absolutely terrifying.
That is always my biggest fear in those kind of things.
Yeah.
Like somebody could hack into the electronic system in your car.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
One.
And that brings us to number one on our countdown of the top 10 incredible cyber crimes, the Sony leak.
Oh, I do know this one.
Mm-hmm. The movie The Interview was a run-of-the-mill buddy comedy co-written and directed by Seth Rogen.
My favorite.
But the topic of the movie, an assassination plot against North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, infuriated North Korea and led to one of the biggest hacks of all time. In the movie The Interview, a journalist is hired by the CIA to assassinate Kim Jong-un of North Korea. But when North Korea heard about the film plot in June 2014, they wrote a letter to the UN Secretary General calling the movie a, quote, act of war. They also threatened merciless countermeasure if the U.S. government in any way supported the release of the movie. 1 month before the movie's release date, on December 25th of 2014, Sony's internal computer system was hacked by a group called the Guardians of Peace.
Okay,
I feel like you're not. The group also took over Sony's Twitter accounts that promoted film projects. Images on Sony employees' computer screens warned of a mass release of data if their demands weren't met. A few weeks after the initial hack, 5 unreleased Sony movies were published on file-sharing sites. Thousands of confidential documents were leaked online, from private emails to salaries to performance reviews on employees to scripts from unreleased shows. As the release date for the movie drew closer, more threatening messages were published by the hackers. One said Sony must, quote, stop immediately showing the movie of terrorism. Another message said anyone who went to see The Interview would meet a bitter fate. The same message also said, remember the 11th of September 2001, which was a blatant threat of a terror attack. The press in the meantime was having a heyday with the data that had been leaked by the hackers. Here are some of the highlights. A Sony executive called Angelina Jolie a minimally talented spoiled brat.
My goodness, that one is the one that I was like, oh,
I was like, okay, shots fired. Emails hinted that Jennifer Lawrence was paid less than her male co-stars in American Hustle.
You don't say.
Kevin Hart was called a, quote, whore by executives.
What?
Sony Pictures co-chair Amy Pascal and director Scott Rudin sent an email chain with racist jokes about President Barack Obama. One line read, should I ask him if he liked Django? Of the 17 top Sony executives who were paid a salary of over $1 million a year, only one was a woman. What do you think is like the most interesting?
I think just like the little things, like somebody calling Angelina Jolie a minimally talented spoiled brat. First of all, I'm like minimally talented. I don't know about
I know.
That.
When they said minimally talented, I was like, I've loved all of her.
I was
movies.
Like, really? I think she's kind of good. She's really good at acting. And then, but I think the things that got released, like, you know, women making less than the men, the yeah. racist stuff, that's all stuff that you're like, all right.
Like, cool.
that's not bad to know.
Let's clean house a little
yeah.
bit. Sony initially decided to adjust the release of The Interview. Then President Obama criticized the move, saying, quote, if somebody is able to intimidate folks out of releasing a satirical movie, imagine what they start doing when they see a documentary they don't like or news reports they don't like.
So true.
Boom, drop the mic. Sony eventually reversed its decision, although by that point, most of the big movie chains had dropped out of releasing the movie over fear of terror attacks. U.S. governmental investigators found that malware used in the hack seemed to be written in Korean.
Huh.
In January 2015, the interview was released. The U.S. later announced sanctions against North Korea, in part as punishment for the hack. Although the interview only has a score of 51% on Rotten Tomatoes, it ended up being Sony's top-grossing digital release at the time when video on demand was factored in.
Great marketing.
It's a great movie.
That was the one that I was, that's the only one I could think of for the list.
Me too.
I'll take it for number one because it halted a movie release and let out all that information.
I remember when that was going on, it was like huge. Me and my friends figured out a way to watch it before it was released.
Of course you did.
So I guess we did a little bit of hacking.
I was just going to say, you hacker.
I mean, I wasn't involved.
Are you on this list?
I didn't hack anything.
Are you Iceman? Mafia Boy?
Could not be me.
Could not.
No, I'd have a cooler name.
I would say that's number one, I suppose. They all kind of had giant, you know, effects on, like, financial effects and other, you know.
They're all number one in their own way.
But then again, that Stuxnet worm is, like, really intense.
Yeah, that was, definitely.
I don't know. This one's a hard one to put something at number one because they all have different, you know, ripple effects.
Yeah, and, like, levels of intensity. I can't think of anything that was left off, though, because I'm not very good when it comes to knowing about hacking.
I'm not up on cyber crimes, but if I find any, I'll come back and yell.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another great episode.
Remember to follow Crime Countdown on Spotify to get a brand new episode delivered every week. You can find all episodes of Crime Countdown and all other podcast shows for free on Spotify.
And if you like this show, follow @Parcast on Facebook and Instagram and @ParcastNetwork on Twitter.
And if you like us, which I hope you do because you're still here, please listen to Morbid anywhere you listen to podcasts. And you can also follow us on Instagram @MorbidPodcast and follow us on Twitter @AMorbidPodcast.
Keep it weird until Monday and make sure you're watching your kids' internet usage. Crime Countdown is executive produced by Max Cutler and is a Spotify original from Parcast. It was created by Max Cutler.
Sound design by Kristen Acevedo with associate sound design by Jamie Ryan. Research by Chelsea Wood. Fact checking by Cheyenne Lopez. Fact checking by Lori Siegel. It's produced by John Cohen, Kristen Acevedo, and Jonathan Ratliff, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro.
We're your hosts, Ash Kelly and Elena Urquhart.